Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scope.
And now, here are your hosts, Jared, Adam, and Shane.
Jordy LaForge, bleep, blur, blop.
That's a faithful interpretation.
It's a great imitation. Guys, it's episode 227 of The Scope.
Oh, I didn't do my job.
I didn't do your job.
Find a Jack K.
Ooh, go find some Jack K. 227.
It's an important episode, Adam. Oh, there's Jack K.
Why is it an important episode, Shane?
Because it's 227.
JackKHarryFans.com. What?
Yeah, we're at Jack K. Harry. The best of sand.
Let the games begin. Oh, Kathy, come in. Can Brenda look after Christine tonight? I think I'm about to deliver. Here? Now? I called Jimmy. He's on his way. Oh, sit down, Kathy. Oh, maybe I should have called an ambulance. Ambulance?
Oh. I see waving
Brenda,
off.
Brenda, come out here.
All right, that's enough of that. It's not going anywhere.
We tried. Jared, I appreciate the effort. Yeah, it's an important show because we are going to revisit an old bit that we did
what?
2 years ago.
Oh, way back in episode 160, you say?
Yeah, it's a long time ago. I thought it was going to be a continuous bit.
It is now.
It is now.
Now it's a series.
Yep. We're calling it the Scope Video Game Essentials, in which we go back and we take a closer look at an older video game system. And talk about some of the games on it that we loved or might have had influence in our lives.
You mean like the Wii?
Like the Wii, for instance.
Yeah, the classics like the Wii.
The classics like the Xbox One.
Wait, the first Xbox or the Xbox One?
Xbox One.
It's confusing.
And the game I'm going to be talking about...
I mean, it's like 2 years old now, so...
Yep.
It's classic.
And the game I'm going to be talking about that has a lot of influence on me
Halo
is...
Halo 5.
Madden 2017. It's not out yet, but it will. Adam, I don't want to alarm you, it looks like your eyebrows are caught in your headband, and it makes your eyebrows look a lot bigger than what they are.
Like a Peter Gallagher level?
Yeah, like super Peter.
Ooh, look at you.
There we go. Nice. Mm-hmm. So yes, we're doing video games today. It's a full video game show. I would consider this episode to be part of our Scope 10-year anniversary celebration.
Okay.
Because I think this bit, at least the first time we did it, got a lot of positive response, and I think it embodies what we do on this show.
Perfect.
So,
bit of a stretch, but I like it.
I'm doing my best. So, guys, why don't we take a quick break?
Now,
let's keep this top of the show light.
Okay.
And then we'll come back with the greatest Scope bit ever done, the Scope Video Game Essentials, right after this.
This is The Funk.
I know all there is to know about the Hunger Games.
Don't be obscene. Oh, oh. I heard you say the word breast when you're at KFC. Don't be obscene. Oh, oh. You said I made you so wet when I spilled my iced tea. Don't be obscene.
Can you help me find a life purpose? I don't know if I should be an elf on a shelf or try dentistry. Let's play reindeer games. Where's the stag party? I want to hang with Vixen. Why does it take 8 deer to pull a 1-horse sleigh? Then the 12 days of Christmas. In the last 12 years. Do you think I make the nice list? Let me take another elfie.
That's the Funny Music Project at thefump.com. thefump.com.
And we are back. Programming note, Jared, this might be a good bit to have its own music.
I know. I looked at, like, what did we do in episode 160?
This is what I did.
And I haven't, we have Tony Partington saying Scope Essentials.
Okay.
And I just haven't put it together, so.
All right.
Yeah, we should do that.
Excellent. So, as we talked about in the beginning of the show, we last did this particular element, Scope element, back in December of 2013, episode 160.
Damn.
If you don't remember, we talked about the Nintendo Entertainment System, and we each talked about three games that meant something to us. Didn't necessarily mean they were the best games, but something that had...
They were the best, though.
Yeah, they were the best. For the record, Jared, that's 9 games if you're into math.
9.
This time around, we're going to dig a bit deeper into the video game history, if you will. We're covering a system that was around before Adam was even born.
Damn, Gina.
It's really the system that started the home video game revolution off. If we're not talking
and ruined
about,
it.
If we're not talking about Pong, of course we're talking about the Atari 2600.
Hmm.
So, for the record, the Atari 2600 hit stores in 1977. Jared was 4.
Was it 77?
Yep.
I was 3. And it
console generations lasted a long time back
then.
And
it lasted deep into about 1983. FYI, it was initially called the Atari VHS.
VCS. Video computer system.
Yes. And the 2600 part was added in 1982. And at the time, if you could order things through catalogs, which people don't know what those are, but, you know, like Sears and JCPenney and Ward's would have
these
catalogs.
People don't know what those
are. What's that?
People don't know what those stores are.
They don't know what those things are. And Sears had its own Atari system. I can't remember what it was called, but it was named specifically for them. It was the same thing. It just had a different name on it. The system was bundled with 2 controllers, 2 paddle controllers, which are like the little round twist knob things.
Sears Telegames 2600.
There you go. There you go. And a game. Initially, it was Combat. Eventually, I believe it was changed to Pac-Man later on. The cost was steep. Back in 77, it was $199. And in today's dollars, that would be $750.
Jeez.
That's
if you adjust for
Oculus
inflation.
Rift right there.
There you go. It was a success. Not an immediate success, but it was a success. It sold around 30 million units. There was a couple different styles Jared's sort of going through. But the main style was that people always remember is the wood-grained panel situation. That was...
Beautiful.
Fairly early, but later on it was switched to an all black called the Darth Vader, and that was done in 1982, I believe. Look at that system.
It looks like Darth Vader. If Darth Vader was a video game,
it does look a bit like it. I'm sure maybe that was inspired by it. So the one thing about this that was unique, A, is it had cartridges, different games that you could switch in and out of that weren't built into it. That was
like the first thing.
That was a very
first one that did that.
A novel thing. And the games themselves were sort of expensive. I think they ran anywhere, you know, between $30 and $50, expensive at the time.
Hmm.
The other thing that it tried to do is it sort of the popularity of Atari rose with the popularity of arcade games. That was the big thing. So, hey, you could bring arcade games home and play them.
Exactly the same.
But the problem was the games were never close to what they actually were. And I know we may not be able to see this, but you can hear it. Here's just a great example of one of the most popular games ever. Of course, I'm talking about Atari. So Jared's going to...
You're talking about Atari.
I'm talking about...
I don't remember that game.
I'm talking about Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Jared's going to play a clip from Pac-Man Arcade, so you can sort of hear what it sounded like in 1981, 82. And we've all heard this before. That's
classic.
The opening music. You can hear Pac-Man. I mean, you can play this game on your iPhone. You can play it just about anywhere you want.
They made an entire album from
they did
Pac-Man songs.
Buckner and Garcia, of course, with Pac-Man Fever, Jared.
Yeah.
They also did the song Do the Donkey Kong. That doesn't really matter because that's not what we're talking about. So, Jared, put a pause on this. Now, let's play the clip from the Atari version of Pac-Man. Completely different. Now, we're looking at the board, first of all, Adam. Mm-hmm.
Garbage.
So you can see that the maze, if you think about the original Pac-Man in the arcade, the maze is a black background with, like, blue borders and then, like, yellow.
Very neonish, if you will.
But if you look at Pac-Man's, the maze background is royal blue. The walls are puce.
It's not a very complimentary brown.
Pac-Man and the ghosts are the same color, and when Pac-Man's actually not round, he looks a bit like a deformed bird.
I believe there are only 2 power pellets, whereas the arcade has 4.
Why is there only 2? No, they're just the blinking is off, Jared.
Oh, okay, because it's paused.
Yeah, but like on Pac-Man, if you were to pass through the screen from one side to the other, it was left to right. On this one, it's up to down. And you're not collecting power pellet dots. You're collecting more like a thin wafer.
Dashes.
So you're doing Pac-Man
community. An M dash and an N dash, essentially. Jared, and there's one giant dash right below the ghost cage. And you'll notice that the ghosts are the ghosts because you couldn't have so much going on the screen that the ghosts actually look like ghosts. They were faded and they would blink and you could barely see them.
Right. They refresh every other frame, it looks like.
And then if you listen to it, because you're going to start playing it now, you can tell that it does not sound anything like the arcade. Go ahead. Wow. And as Pac-Man goes up and down, he only looks left and right. His body
doesn't. Look at the ghost just jumping all over the place.
There's a lot of ghost action going on here.
This was such a disappointment for me.
Yes.
Because it was big news that this was coming to the Atari. And then we got this.
Some might say that E.T. was the game that sort of sunk Atari. But Pac-Man was one that began the Titanic into the iceberg, because the expectations were so high.
This video really helps cement. So I said it's like the ghosts redraw every other frame.
Yeah.
It's like every 10th frame or something.
It's
like
pretty rough. Obviously, you're looking at a YouTube video, so it's not quite the same, but it's just... It's very
sort of on an old CRT television, it would sort of blur it a little better, and it wasn't as... Yeah. Stark, but
we don't need to get a cherry in the middle. Instead, we're going to get a very poorly made fried egg.
I thought it was a Pop-Tart.
It was a Pop-Tart. Right. So there you go. So it obviously the Atari was the precursor to the arcade at home experience, and it didn't really start kicking off until the ColecoVision hit in the probably 84, where you could actually get an arcade quality type Donkey Kong. And then once Nintendo hit in the late 80s, then that
there
was
the Atari 400 did a very good, faithful arcade version of Pac-Man.
Sure.
I remember that. So it did happen eventually. But
yeah, it just took a while to get there.
Yep.
So why don't we get to talking about games that meant something to us? Let's start with Jared, just because I've done a lot of talking. Jared,
okay,
talk about a game that meant something to you that was good. Wait, or just you love.
Did you guys own 2600s?
I actually did not.
I never owned it either. Neither. I always played it with my friends. I was too poor.
Yeah. There was a period in my life where, I don't know, we borrowed one from a friend or something. Like, this was early 80s and just like a shoebox full of games. And we loved that. But I had neighbors who had them. I had a friend in high school who had the Atari 2600 Junior, which brings me to this game. I'm going to talk about Yar's Revenge. This was one of the games that I really remember, and we played a lot of this, my friend in high school. I mean, this would have been like mid to late 80s that I played this, so it was actually years past its prime. But I'll give you the little synopsis of what the game was supposed to be about, and I'll play a little audio while we do that. So this game, you're the hero, Ayar, is an insect-like creature who must nibble or shoot through a barrier in order to fire his Zorlon cannon into the breach and destroy the evil Quotile? I don't know. Which exists on the other side of the barrier. The Quotile can shoot the Yar even if the barrier is undamaged by turning into the Swirl. Unfortunately, or fortunately, the player is warned before the shot is fired and he can retreat to a safe distance to dodge the enemy's energy blast. The game also has a safe area, the neutral zone, where the pursuing enemy torpedo cannot harm him. The Yar cannot shoot from the neutral zone. The game came out in May 30th, 1982. So it's, a series of squares and a vaguely insect-like thing, and you would just go around the screen and try to shoot this barrier to get
to
the main bad
guy. I'm watching this, and I still don't understand how it's played.
I don't... Yeah, I mean, it's very simple.
Yeah. Like, why is that barrier there? I don't get it.
I don't know. I guess you could eat it, too, with insect. I think you blew it up there. I don't know. For whatever reason, I really enjoyed playing this game, but, you know, it was probably pretty high-tech as far as Atari 2600 games.
Oh, there's the swirl.
This came out in 82, so it was, you know, midpoint or, you know, they had sort of figured out what they could do with the system. And yeah. Anyway, a lot of the sound is nothing to write home about.
I think he can shoot on one side of the barrier. But he can't kill the guy with his gun on that barrier. But if he goes on the other side of the barrier, he can chip away at it, and then he can shoot the big missile.
Right. And that little thing is still chasing him around the whole time. So you got to keep moving.
Right. And he's got a melee attack, too.
Yeah. Anyway, that is Yar's Revenge, ladies and gentlemen. Another game I will talk about is... This was my first exposure to Star Wars video games. And, of course, I'm talking about Parker Brothers' Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back. Isn't it beautiful? faithful rendition.
It's very similar to what we heard in The Force Awakens.
So this game was pretty much just the Walker assault on Hoth. There was really nothing else to it.
Yeah.
It came from Parker Brothers, which I guess I don't remember them doing video games. Maybe this was the only ones, but
they did a bunch of Star Wars
did
games,
they?
Jared. Yes.
Okay.
It's not an A-Wing, right? Land speeder?
It's a snow speeder.
It's a T-47 air speeder / snow speeder.
That snow speeder has way better agility than I remember them having.
Yeah. So it's a side-scrolling thing. You basically have, you're a snow speeder attacking walkers, and there's sort of one spot where you can hit them, like on their chin, basically. Yeah. And you would just fly back and forth, try not to die.
One pixel.
And there's like a little radar scope thing at the bottom that sort of tells you where the walkers are.
Sort of.
It seems like they're sort
Apparently you can land to get health, Jared?
I didn't know that. I was never very good at this.
No.
But this was one that I played, at a friend's house. Yeah. They also had an Intellivision, but we played this an awful lot. So this came out at the end of December 1982. So my games came out in 82.
This came out almost, 6 months before Jedi came out. The interesting thing here is that, at the age that you are when this comes out, Jared's eight or nine,
mm-hmm.
I mean, to have any sort of Star Wars experience at home is amazing.
Yes.
I mean, this was the greatest thing in the world to be able to do this.
Yeah.
Even if
you
the
felt
gameplay
like you were playing
was,
the movie.
The gameplay was so limited, and obviously, snow speeders couldn't shoot down.
Obviously, we've got the Force power up right now because the music is playing and the ship is flashing.
So there we go.
There you go. Empire Strikes Back from Parker Brothers on there. The last one I'm going to talk about is from Activision, and it's called River Raid. And I'm going to set it up with the super awesome commercial for the game that I remember this commercial vividly, and it made me so excited to play the game.
Yes.
So here we go.
We have no choice. He can't turn back.
River Raid target has zero.
Under control.
Approaching airspeed.
Way to go.
Taking West Canyon.
Good call.
Fuel critical, sir.
Chopper's at 3 o'clock.
Roger, I copy.
He'll decide that.
Fuel critical, sir.
He knows that.
Sir, he's off for the East Canyon.
Negative. That's a trap.
River Raid, don't sweep home. It's
River Raid. Can you make it? River Raid, can you make it?
It's only a game. River Raid.
Only a game.
Video computer system designed by Carol Shaw for Activision.
I mean, they tell you who it's designed by.
Yeah, that's the commercial for the game. And now, doesn't that sound super damn exciting?
It does.
Well, here's the actual game.
You're an
airplane flying. You can only fly in the river for whatever reason. I mean,
you can shoot your fuel, or you can gather it.
Right. So River Raid is the grandfather of all vertical shooter games, and it's a great classic. You control your fighter plane going down the River of No Return, and it's your goal to destroy enemy tankers, helicopters, and jets, racking up as many points as possible. Avoid touching the sides of the river, or you'll crash, and you can watch your fuel, too. You got to fly over the fuel to refuel. So basically, it's sort of the first vertical scrolling shooter type game from Activision, too. Yeah,
they call those shmups now.
If you shoot the bridge, you shoot the bridge, guys. Look out for those jets.
They can fly apparently over the river and the land, but your plane can't. Very strange.
Here's the thing, Adam, and this will not mean anything to you, but when Activision started releasing games to the Atari, it was a very big deal because the games that they released always seemed to be a little bit cooler, a little bit more well done. Graphically, I mean, this doesn't look good, but compared to a lot of the stuff that was out there, if you compare this to some of the other games that you and I are going to talk about soon.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like the ghosts that were flashing all over the place. Everything seems pretty locked down.
It's very seamless. And they had other games like Kaboom and Keystone. Was it Keystone Caper?
Yep.
You
could push forward to go faster.
It was a very challenging type
of thing. Nailed the advertising part.
Yep.
You got you excited, even if the game wasn't that great. So
there you go.
That's River Raid.
River Raid, a classic Atari game.
Yep. Those are three games that meant something to me.
Adam, why don't you do your three?
Okay. I'll do me.
Yes.
You do you.
So the first one that I'll talk about, I think Shane mentioned it. It was the Pac-In game for the system when it launched in 1977. This is Combat, as it was advertised, 27 video games in one. It's great. What a bargain. They're all basically the same take on ship to ship combat.
Guys, talking, trying to find some sound for you.
I mean,
go ahead, you just keep going. Okay.
Combat was almost like Pong in a way.
Yes,
because
in fact,
you had
one of the 27 games is Tank Pong, where it's just Pong, but you are controlling two tanks. So yeah, basically the game is maybe you remember it most as the tank on tank combat. Yes, this is what the tanks sound like.
Is this what they sound like, or your system is broken?
And it's funny because, like, do you remember Resident Evil 1 through 4 had what were called tank controls? Because the control of your character is always represented by the direction that it's facing. So if in this case the tank is pointing up, if you push to the left, it would not move the tank to the left. It turns the tank, let's say.
It was very difficult.
Yeah, this is probably the one with the paddle that you would use anyway to spin.
And you can steer your bullets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just like Wanted. You know, you put some...
Yep. A little masse on it.
Yeah. So there's lots of different... The 27 games, so it's like there's a helicopter, there's tanks, there's airplanes. But they're all basically the same thing. The battlefield changes. Yeah. It's just one big square, and you drive around and shoot your buddy. But I remember playing this, so...
I mean, this game came out in 1977. What's the context in which you remember playing this?
So one of my friends in my cul-de-sac, his family owned one. And I don't think... I probably played it... So, what? The NES came out in 86, 87, but I didn't get one until 89.
Okay.
So the Blue Tank is just daring Red to advance.
This is the original Red versus Blue. Yeah, so it was probably like I was 6 or 7 when I was playing this with, and he was like 2 years older than me, my friend. Mm-hmm. So he probably was destroying me all the time.
Yeah,
but it's like
jump ahead and see if there's any other
play,
versions.
It's
here.
Like, you know, I'm sure I had played other games, like the next one I'll talk about in a second. It's not a multiplayer game, but like the idea, like I liked board game, I liked any sort of game that I could play with other people.
Yeah.
And that the fact that you could play this with the other person sitting next to you and, you know, talk trash and everything, whatever a 7-year-old trash talker sounds like. It was great. I loved it.
This is an invisible one where you're invisible until you shoot.
Oh yeah, that was weird.
So there you go, combat.
Yeah, combat.
What's your next game?
Next one is Adventure. This one came out in 1979. This was also the first game, and this were produced by Atari. Adventure is the, well, let's just call it the first open world video game of all time. I don't know if that's fair or true, but whatever.
It isn't, because the one I'm talking about predates
that. Oh, that's right, because you can go left. Okay.
Nope.
I apologize. So Adventure was
a dot.
Yes, you're a dot. And maybe you remember this game if you're not sure what I'm talking about. That you are a dot and you have to go through this maze of different screens. There's dragons, there's keys, there's castles. They're all different colors. There's a sword, which is really just an arrow.
So you can only carry one item at a time. Is that how it works?
Yes.
Oh, dragon's dead.
Yeah. This game, I remember playing at my friend's house. And I remember we beat it. I don't know if it was me that beat him or my friend, or we just did it together. And then we could never recreate it. Like, there's an obvious pattern here, right? And there's probably like not more than, let's say, 27 screens.
Yeah.
That, you know, exist.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. But it's like, find the black key, it opens the black door. Go in the black door. Find the blue key, it opens the blue door. And like you just kind of do that.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, you go, you know, through these screens, and it's a maze, and you forget where stuff is. And anyway,
you've got a bridge.
So we beat it one night. I remember, like, we stayed up till, you know, way past our bedtime, so like 11, let's say. We beat it. Could never do it again. We tried for, I want to say, years. I don't really know if it was true. I want to read this review to you. So first of all, it got five.
I like how the dragon's body just hangs out there. I'm dead.
Oh, this is the final boss.
That was level one playthrough is what that was.
All game.
That's the game. $50. Thank you.
All game gave it 5 stars. Mm-hmm. So great. In the year since, it's received mixed reviews, but immediately after its release, it was generally viewed as more positive. Bill Kunkel and Frank Laney in the January 81 issue of Video magazine called Adventure a major design breakthrough and said that it shatters video game conventions such as scoring and time limits.
No
scoring.
I mean, it's like it's a totally different thing. I mean,
right.
And it's weird how the limitations of the game, of the hardware. I mean, you were literally removing a key and a dot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like this weird conceptual thing, like graphic elements boil down to its basest element, you know? They're doing it out of necessity, but nowadays, you know, designers will design games because they want to do it, because they can do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it's a great game, but it's just something of note to think about.
Yep. My last one, real quick. It's not that dissimilar from my first one, but Joust. Again, it's another game that I remember playing just so much with my friend in my neighborhood. And Joust is actually the precursor to the original Mario Brothers game.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, it's a single screen. In Joust, you fly around on a flying ostrich.
Yep.
It had weird things with it. Like it had momentum.
Yeah. Inertia
Not have been. It had to been pretty difficult to get that to work on that meager hardware.
Yeah.
This game actually, just the base elements of it.
Yeah.
Again, you're talking about scaling things down because it's the Atari 2600. This is actually pretty good.
Yeah, you're limited. Like the
bird,
the sprites
and the
are one
color. Yeah.
But the gameplay seems to be the same as the arcade, pretty much.
They move like the arcade does, so that's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could play both against your friend and against the computer-controlled enemies at the same time. So it just offered some kind of different stuff. You gotta catch that egg, though. Oh, man.
Get it, dude.
Very nice. All right, my turn, Jared. So the first game I'm going to pick is Miss Pac-Man.
Interesting choice.
Miss Pac-Man came out 1 year after the terrible Pac-Man port. It came out in 1983. And the thing about this is it actually felt more like the arcade game than the Pac-Man did. Like, Miss Pac-Man looks
off. At least the sound is similar.
The ghost turn.
It's not that... Meh, 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 meh.
The ghost turn the correct color. You know, you have a cherry bouncing around.
She turns the right direction.
It has different mazes, which the other ones didn't. The mazes still are not an exact duplication of Miss Pac-Man, the arcade, but you can clearly tell that the creators of the programmers of this game learned something.
Yeah, this is way better than that first.
Yeah, just a year later.
Amazing. Yeah. Huh.
So, and one of the reasons why I picked this is because I remember a lot of my Atari memories are around my cousins who they had the Atari, like going over to their house and playing. And I remember, your aunt got a new game. You should, we're going to go over there this weekend and you can play it. And I was a video game fiend. So anytime you get something like this, it was very exciting. And Miss Pac-Man in general was the game that I sort of became good at video games in the arcade. Like before that, I would go and I'd play Asteroids just a year later, and I was too young and I didn't understand it, and I would just be a waste of quarters. But
you were basically Billy Mitchell,
yes,
in your household.
By the time this game came around, I had figured it out and I could play a game for more than 2 minutes.
Good job.
I know. So let's go on to the next game, Jared. Adam brought up the game Adventure. Well, I'm going to talk about Superman. This game came out, it's sort of debated, came out in 78 or 79. It's piggybacking on the movie release. It was built using a prototype engine from Atari's Adventure, so it actually came out before Adventure.
Hmm.
It was interesting because Superman had to accomplish a bunch of tasks. The sound is terrible. include fixing a bridge, capturing Luthor's bad guys, among others, instead of simplistic challenges found in many other of the Atari games of the time, like, shoot each other on a playing field or, they're stupid. I guess I must be kryptonite.
But I like how Superman's wearing a very low-cut top.
Yes. I found it to be one of the first deep games in the history of video games. When you think about adventure, this one you have tasks. It's sort of this open-world thing. Superman can fly. He's got his special powers. Excuse me, that he can use. And it felt like they actually treated the Superman property nicely compared to other Superman games. He's kissing Lois Lane right now. She heals him. So,
I thought maybe the microwave was done and he needed to get his dinner out of it.
I remember playing this game. This was before hanging out with my cousins. My mom's boyfriend at the time had an Atari. And so for me to get to, they go over to his house with my mom and then get to play Atari was a very big deal. I was really young, so you're going to let a 4 or 5 year old play on the $700 video game system. Mm. So this was probably one of the first games I ever remember playing. And like you, Adam,
why would you not love it?
Beating it was impossible. Yeah. Didn't understand it. So let's go to the last game of the cycle. We're going to be talking about Pitball, another Activision game.
Mm-hmm.
So this game came out in 1982, Jared. It was a huge hit. It sold over 4 million copies.
4 million? That's
and
amazing.
It was another game that had an example of, like, varied challenges. I mean, it was not just a very linear thing. You had many different screens that you had to go through. You had jumping over alligators. You had to take on scorpions. You had logs that were rolling around. In the game, you played Pitfall Harry. He was an adventurer that searched for lost gold. To find the gold, you had to swing over vines, like I said, escape scorpions, and jump over logs and crocodiles. Any bit of bad timing meant your doom. If you could find all 32 treasures in 20 minutes, you'd win.
Which I did.
I never did that.
I didn't.
There's one treasure
I did it,
right there.
I did it, like, as practically an adult, but...
Yes. It was just a... very different game of the time. You didn't shoot anything. It was all about exploration and just accomplishing, beating the tasks and challenges ahead of you.
I love that 10% of the screen is dedicated to the word Activision and then just the black down.
Activision had that in many of their games, actually. It was a huge branding thing.
Mm-hmm. You know that you can go left on the first screen. And
that's the way I went
in this. A lot of people don't know.
Look at that move right there. Pretty good. So there you go. Activision's Pitfall 1982.
82 was a good year for
82 was a great
games.
Year, right? I mean, 82 was, I think that E.T. came out in 83, which was kind of the beginning of the end, at least from Atari's standpoint. But boy, oh boy, Atari helped lay the groundwork for the Nintendo, but also for the Commodore 64, had, mm-hmm. You know, the Texas Instruments gaming machine. There's a lot of stuff that was out there. So even though there was a complete implosion of the video game universe... the groundwork was set, and it would
and it was
never let go.
It was definitely the king amongst its contemporaries. I mean, you eventually had a ColecoVision that came out, you know, several years into the run, but it never quite got that great of a reception.
You had the Intellivision, which came out probably 1980 or so, which was Mattel's home system.
And there are people who really loved that, but it didn't. I don't think it sold that well.
It had a fancier disc-based controller, which was very lame and easy to break. Although my different aunt had that system, and I would love to go play that. Mm-hmm. Had a good racing game and some good sports games, but Atari was the thing that set it up.
And unfortunately, they could never really recapture the glory, could they? They had the 5200 that came out. They had the 400 and 800 computers. Later on, the Jaguar and the Lynx, I guess, they had some decent success with. But
they could never really
recapture the golden age. I don't know if it was just because they didn't do well enough, or it was because they always were looked at as the sort of company that created and then destroyed the industry, at least in America. I don't know.
I think that's a lot to do with it. So there you go, guys. Scope Essentials Video Game Edition Atari 2600. We will definitely be revisiting this bit with more retro video game systems in the future. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with coming soon.
Look out for the laser!
It's the scope.
Under the scope.
So here we are. We are back with the scope.
Hmm.
We are back with under the scope.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And we are back with coming soon.
Tried to do a little sideways on it.
I like it.
Didn't work.
Okay, Adam.
Yes.
Please tell us, what is coming up in the world of pop culture?
All right, we've got music from The Falcon.
Don't know.
Gwen Stefani.
Gwen is back with a solo album.
She's married.
Did you hear that No Doubt, the entire band of No Doubt, is recording a new album with a new lead singer without her?
No, I had not heard.
With a different name.
That seems like a waste of time.
Are they called No Doubt?
No, I think it's just the players of No Doubt and a male singer.
They should call it Without a Doubt.
Oh, nice.
That doubt, Gwen Stefani.
Gone. Go ahead.
Hoover Phonic, Iggy Pop, Red Foo, Soul Asylum, Underworld, Violent Soho.
These are things you say to your mother when you're drunk. Oh, we're not playing Pyramid?
We should play Pyramid. Next.
Film. We've got Miracles from Heaven, The Divergent Series, Allegiant, Midnight Special, The Bronze.
All right. Not a great week. A great week. Unless you're a big fan of those Divergent movies.
Right.
Which,
home video.
That was weird.
I'm not a big fan.
Half Shell Heroes, Blast of the Past. Now, this is a TMNT thing, I assume. Half Shell Heroes?
Must be from Nickelodeon cartoon.
All right. Steve Jobs, the man
oh,
in the machine.
It's not about oysters. Okay.
So this is not the actual Steve Jobs movie.
I would have picked that as a hit if it was the actual Steve Jobs.
In Good Company. Sisters. We all like Sisters, I think.
Mm-hmm. My wife loved that show.
No, the movie.
Not Sister, Sister. Oh. Sisters.
Oh.
Tina Fey, Amy Poehler.
Maybe I would have. I probably would have picked
Unfortunately,
that one.
Unfortunately, it opened Star Wars weekend and just was forgotten.
My good friend, Al, friend of the show, did not like Sisters as much as we did.
Really?
What? Mm-hmm. Surprising.
What's wrong with him?
Maybe we hyped it too much.
Hmm.
What else?
Georgia Rule, mm-hmm. Harvey Comics, Baby Huey's Great Easter Adventure.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh. The Big Short.
Jared's a huge Baby Huey fan.
Oh, can't get enough.
See his computer room upstairs. Yeah.
When I was 17, I played in a laser tag league. And,
of course you did.
And one of the guys that played, he was a grown-up, 30-something-year-old.
Wow, what a champion.
His, you had name, nicknames, screen names, whatever you want to call them. His was Baby Huey.
Wow.
Adam has it exactly right.
Thank you. Video games. We've got EA Sports UFC 2.
Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with UFC 1.
No, that's the old one. It's one less.
One less.
Need for Speed for PC.
Yep.
Came out for Windows or for PS4 and Xbox One a few months ago. Did not
Still
get good
thing,
reviews.
Huh?
Uh-huh.
Still a thing, Jared.
Even after that movie. Mario and Sonic at the Rio 2016 Olympic Games.
Yep. Where they all get sick by doing swimming events because the water's polluted.
Right. I see what you're saying. And then
I thought they were going to fix it. Guess not.
And then this is... No, this is called Pokken Tournament. That is the name of this game.
I thought it was Pokemon Tournament.
It is. But here, look. See, Pokken Tournament.
Weird.
Pokken Tournament game. Oh, it's a combo of Pokemon and Tekken for the Wii U.
What?
I don't believe... That's not a game. That's all made up.
That's not a thing.
It says right here.
Okay.
The game combines gameplay elements from Bandai Namco's Tekken series with characters from the Pokemon franchise. It was released in Japanese arcades in July 16th, 2015, with a worldwide home release set for the Wii U on March 18th, 2016.
Hmm. That's somewhat intriguing and also weird. Is that it?
Well...
Except Jared. Hit it or miss it. Hit up a
week. Hit it or miss it. Wow.
All right. This time it's my week, and I am doing a solid miss.
You going with the long one? Okay. Go ahead.
We haven't done the long one in a long time. I am speaking of the movie, another movie that took on The Force Awakens. I don't know how it did, but I'm going to say terrible. I'm talking about Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip. Even my daughter didn't want to see this.
Wow.
Although she does like Fuller House. So I'm not going to
give... Do you know her married name is Fuller?
Now I do.
Not your daughter. DJ Fuller.
Do you know that Jason Lee still does the voice of Dave? Or the voice, jeez.
Yeah.
Still plays Dave.
He missed one of the movies, and then he came back because he's like, I need to do this.
He's got
to
eat.
Mm-hmm.
Got to eat.
Daddy's got to eat.
Yeah. My name is Earl, no longer on the air. He's got to eat.
Do you want to know how much it made?
How much?
Okay, it's budget, $90
million.
Mm-hmm. $90 million was his budget?
I know.
Can't be.
It says right here.
American dollars?
Yes.
Jason Lee got $62 million of that.
Box office. Any guesses what the box office is?
Worldwide or U.S.?
That's what I'm trying to find out.
Okay, but look,
they had to pay Justin Long, Christina Applegate.
Christina Applegate was in it?
It says...
I'm going to say it brought in $61
million. 28. Domestic.
This is international.
Oh, international 72.
$215 million.
Damn.
84 domestic, 131 international.
All right, that's it. We're done with Under the Scope.
We're done with this show. But that's the shit that you guys are watching.
There's no hope for it.
Under the Scope.
Wow. I guess that's why there's more than one of them, because they make money.
Yeah.
Even at $90 million budget.
Even
against Star Wars.
It's crazy.
Hmm.
Jared, right. Yeah. wrap this trip up here.
Already? Oh, I gotta say stuff, don't I?
Yeah, that's
on. Ah! Yeah, okay, so we talked about the classic Atari 2600. This is your chance to chime in with what your favorite Atari VCS/2600 or telecomputer 2600S, if you're a Sears fan, what your favorite games were for the system. Make sure you call us at 612-21-SCOPE. That is 612-217-2673. And if you can manage to call in and have sound from your favorite game playing in the background, then kudos to you. You can also email us at comments@thescopeshow.com or hit us up on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr. All those links are at thescopeshow.com website. Or you can see us. Maybe you'll see some clips from these games. Depends on how enterprising I feel like being in the editing. But you'll definitely hear them over on a YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/thescopeshow.
Rumor has it you have a full week to work on it.
Rumor has it. Isn't that a song from someone, like Adele or some shit?
Anyway.
I like the mouth trumpet.
Fleetwood Mac.
Sure. If you'd like to support these shenanigans where we talk about video games and eat popcorn for your listening pleasure.
For 3 weeks solid, Josh. Seal that bag.
Oh my God. You guys took a lot of that down. Good job.
Adam's bringing that bag home.
You can see that at youtube.com/thescopeshow. Like or... I already talked about that. I was talking about supporting us. Patreon is the place you want to go. Patreon.com/thescopeshow. Pledge as little as $1 an episode. Set a monthly cap or cancel anytime. It's the service where you support content creators directly because you are cool, fun people who like to see awesome things happen. Or you can shop at Amazon, thescopeshow.com/Amazon. Click on that link. We get a little kickback, and it doesn't cost you any bit more.
No. Not even your sanity.
Back to you, Shane.
Wow, great job, Jared. Great job, Adam.
Thank you.
Great job, video games.
Yeah!
Video games came through for us today.
So yeah!
So guys, we got a break next week, but we will be back after that with a lot of scope with Jared, Adam, and Shane. So let's do it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. You're great. We'll see you next time. Pop it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves once again at the end. I hope you've enjoyed our time together. I know I have. Fear not, Scope faithful. Days shall pass as if they were but a moment. And Jared, Adam, and Shane will return with another thrilling episode. Until then, send your comments to comments@thescopeshow.com or leave a voicemail message by dialing
612-21-SCOPE. That's 612-217-2673.
Thanks for listening, faithful fans. This is Tony Partington saying, Auf Wiedersehen. Tune in next time to another terrific edition of The Scope.